Bagthorpe's Unlimited. Chapter 1. If one had to pinpoint the event that sent the Bagthorpes plunging into the madness that was to possess them for a whole season, then that event would be the burglary. There were other factors, of course, not least among them the infuriating rise to fame of Zero, Grandma, and Daisy. But it was the burglary that really triggered things off. The man who had come to do the burglary could not, as Mr. Bagthorpe pointed out, have been very bright, because he ended up stealing all the wrong things. On the other hand, he stole quite a large quantity of things, and must certainly have filled two or even more sacks. It was Grandma who first discovered the crime. The rest of the family was in the kitchen having breakfast, when there came from overhead a series of progressively agonized shrieks. Everyone immediately stopped eating and arguing, and listened. There came a long, high wail. "It's Mother!" Mrs. Bagthorpe pushed back her chair and turned quite pale. "It's Mother, all right," Mr. Bagthorpe agreed. "Pass the toast, William. Sit down, Laura."
"But she might be ill," protested Mrs. Bagthorpe.
"If she were," replied her husband, "she would be in no condition to produce noises of that order."
"True," murmured Mrs. Bagthorpe, and sank back into her chair. She did not want to create a scene, partly because these were all too frequent a feature of Bagthorpian life already, and partly because she felt that she should set an example by being calm and sensible at all times. This was to counteract the effect on the children made by Mr. Bagthorpe, who was never calm or sensible.
"I could go and take Mrs. Bagthorpe Senior a nice cup of tea," offered Mrs. Fosdyke, who came in daily to do for the Bagthorpes. She had stopped rattling dishes abruptly when the first shriek came, and was plainly agog. "There's no need for that," said Mr. Bagthorpe, in a tightly controlled voice. He had to control his voice fairly tightly when addressing Mrs. Fosdyke, because she drove him, as he frequently told people, to the very limits of his sanity.
"Well, she is old," said Mrs. Fosdyke, defensively.
"Father is 85," Mr. Bagthorpe told her, "and a full 10 years older. He is not shrieking for cups of tea." This was true. Grandpa, whose hearing aid may or may not have been switched on, was placidly tapping the top of his second boiled egg with his spoon. "Oh, well," Mrs. Fosdyke shrugged and turned back to the sink, where she set up a considerable rattle. Jack said, "I think she's coming. The shrieks are getting nearer." He was right. The door was flung open, and Grandma stood there in her dressing gown and slippers with her hair raveled and amok. She pointed accusingly at her son, looking for all the world like Grendel's mother rising from the mirror. "Heartless wretch," she cried, "did you not hear your own mother calling?"
"When people cry wolf as often as you do, Mother," replied Mr. Bagthorpe, calmly buttering his toast, "they tend eventually to get ignored altogether."
"Come and sit down, Mother," said Mrs. Bagthorpe soothingly, pulling out a chair. "You look quite upset."
"Upset?" Grandma's voice was beginning to rise again. "I am frantic. I am undone."
"Whatever by?" cried Mrs. Bagthorpe. "I mean, what is the matter?"
"I have been robbed," Grandma told her dully. "I have been robbed of all I hold dearest in the world."
She did sit down then, quite suddenly, and Jack at least realized that she was perfectly serious. His father, on the other hand, showed no sign of being similarly impressed.
"Someone pinched your photo collection, have they?" he inquired unsympathetically. "Ha! That'll be the day."
"They have! They have!" Grandma shrieked. Jack was impressed by the way she uttered these words. It seemed to him that they had the ring of truth. On the other hand, of course, the very idea that anyone should wish to own all Grandma's photographs of Thomas was ludicrous. Thomas, an ill-favored and malevolent Ginger Tom, had been the light of Grandma's life, until Uncle Parker had inadvertently run him over in the drive some years previously.
"Grandma," Jack began, Have your photos of Thomas really gone?
Oh, gone, 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 she moaned.
In that case, said Mr. Bagthorpe decisively, there is evidently a dangerous lunatic at large. We had better telephone the police and report it. All I had left of Thomas were my memories and those wonderful living likenesses. Grandma was off on her own now. I never felt I had truly lost him until this moment. I shall go and see for myself, said Mrs. Bagthorpe, and went out. She was back quite soon, and was pale again. It's true, she told them all, incredulously, as if hoping to be contradicted. Mr. Bagthorpe looked slightly nonplussed at this. He regarded his offspring with a keen eye. You four, he said. Come on. Who's got 'em? The young Bagthorpes set up an instant and noisy chorus of denial, and Grandma waved a hand to quell it. In the ensuing silence, she scanned dramatically about her and said at last, with absolute conviction, "It was an outside job." Rosie started to giggle, and Tess choked into her coffee. Grandma was hooked on television police programs, and was always coming out with this kind of jargon. She had once confided to the head of Rosie's school that Grandpa had done time. This was for being a conscientious objector, though Grandma did not say this. On one memorable occasion she had prefaced her reading of the second lesson in church by clasping the Bible and swearing to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. At the end of the lesson she had slammed the Bible shut in a cloud of dust and cried aggressively, "So help me God!" glaring about the congregation as if daring anyone to stand up and cross-examine. "There may be other things missing." Mrs. Bagthorpe was becoming agitated. She did yoga daily to try to keep calm, but it did not seem to work all that well. On the other hand, her children often speculated about what she would be like if she did not do yoga. "If there are other things missing, they will certainly not be missed," Mr. Bagthorpe told her. "Not if this burglar's taste runs to things like photos of that damned cat." "Henry!" Mrs. Bagthorpe was now quivering. "Do try to be serious. Our home has been broken into during the night. We must investigate." "Come on." William moved for the door. "What about my radio equipment?" "I shall go and have a look in the sitting room, Mrs. Bagthorpe," volunteered Mrs. Fosdyke, arming herself, unnecessarily, Jack thought, with a brush. She went out. Grandma lifted her head. "There's no need," she said mournfully. "I know what has been taken." "You know?" repeated Mrs. Bagthorpe. "How can you possibly, dear?" "I have a list," replied Grandma, incomprehensibly. "Left a list, has he?" Mr. Bagthorpe said. "First time I've ever known that. Thorough, this burglar fellow." Grandma turned her gaze on her son. "I made the list, Henry," she told him. "You mean you've been up since the crack of dawn, writing down all that's been taken?" asked Tess admiringly. "Golly, Grandma!" exclaimed Rosie. Grandma shook her head, and one or two hairpins slipped and fell with a kind of melancholy, like the last leaves of the year. "You don't understand," she said. "I made the list before the burglary." "Oh, my God!" Mr. Bagthorpe pushed back his chair. "We haven't another prophet on our hands, for heaven's sake. You're rambling, Mother. Pull yourself together." "I want a cup of hot sweet tea," Grandma said. "I am suffering from shock. Oh, Thomas!" She took a maddeningly long time to sip the tea Mrs. Bagthorpe leaped to supply, and during this time Mrs. Fosdyke reappeared. She positively ran into the room in her best hedgehog manner. Oh, there's the blue teapot gone off the sideboard," she cried, "and the portraits off the walls." "My portraits!" Rosie squealed, and rushed out to see for herself. Portraits were one of the strings to Rosie's bow, the others being the violin, mental arithmetic, and swimming. The previous year she had painted birthday portraits of both herself and Grandma, which Mrs. Bagthorpe had judged good enough to be framed and hung in the sitting room. "Thank goodness you weren't in there, old chap," Jack said, sotto voce to Zero, who was slumped by him as he usually was at breakfast. He was referring to Zero's portrait, not to the dog himself. As it happened, his relief was to be short-lived. "There is no need for people to keep running about the house," proclaimed Grandma dismally. "We already know the worst. The man obviously followed my list to the letter." Here she held up a sheet of note-paper, covered on both sides in her own neat, slanting hand. "Give that to me," ordered Mr. Bagthorpe, snatching it from her. Halfway down the first page he yelled, "My God! My scripts!" and ran from the room. Grandma then tried to explain to those left in the kitchen what had happened. It appeared that several weeks previously Grandma had read an article about burglary, and precautions that might be taken against it. Somebody interviewed had passed on what seemed to Grandma like a useful tip. "Whenever he went away," this man said, "he always left on the kitchen table a letter for any burglar who might come, and £20 in used £5 notes. The letter said, 'There is nothing of any real value in this house, so please do not ransack it. Please take the £20 with my compliments.' Apparently, a burglar had come once, and this strategy had worked. The burglar even scrawled, 'Thanks,' on the bottom of the letter. It was," this man explained, "much better to lose £20 in this tidy way than to come back home and find the entire house turned upside down and all sorts of things missing.